I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
And welcome in. As they say, sometimes you save the best for last. And this is Hunt Fish Talk. Keith Lusher, host of North Shore Fishing Report, and Wendy Billiott, president of Louisiana Outdoor Writers Association, join us for a roundtable discussion of issues of the day pertaining to sportsmen and sportswomen. Keith, how are you this morning?
I'm doing just fine, Don. Beautiful day we got going. And great interview with the Flyway Federation. We need to hear more about that.
Absolutely. And Wendy, what are you doing down in Doolarge?
Good morning. Could we have not had a better, more perfect weather week?
Mm-hmm. Well,
the weather was fabulous.
Been, some of the offshore people were complaining. Martha was complaining this morning.
She's fighting wind.
Yeah, the wind. But outside of that, it was really nice. I had an offshore trip Thursday, and it was kind of laid down. It was really nice out there. Pretty blue water, pretty blue skies. Just really some good weather. And we've been due for it. This has been a kind of a late hanging winter we've had here.
Mm-hmm. It was the guides here. It didn't stop them. There were reports everywhere: trout slams and reds galore, and they somehow managed to fight through the elements of the wind and some muddy water here and there, but for the most part, the fishing's just on fire down here.
Well, that's good, because I got a trip in Cocodry not too far from there this coming week, and, you know, you can't hardly go wrong with a full moon weekend in May with a 1.5 tidal range. Unless you're fishing in that dirty Mississippi River water, you're bound to catch some speckled trout, and unfortunately, the reports, Keith, as I'm sure you're aware of, for trout are not good over on the eastern side of the state.
Yeah. We're seeing some changes now, and I don't know what's going to happen. If this spillway thing's going to be a normal thing, and, you know, if this lake's going to it's slowly changing, and maybe this is what we need to start focusing on is more freshwater, you know, fishing up here on the North Shore. Of course, we still have the Wrigley's. We still got the ICW, Biloxi Marsh, but man, we were spoiling for a while with those trout coming up, you know, as far as, shoot, they'd come out all the way to Manchac. But we will see, as they say, we will see and see if we can clear this out and get it, maybe reclaim our summer, maybe get a little salinity into the lake. We've been known to catch some redfish along the shoreline and along the causeway during midsummer. So maybe we can reclaim our saltwater fishing for a little while.
Don, were you talking more about down at the mouth of the Mississippi River, down in that area?
I'm talking about Lake Pontchartrain, Lake Bourne, you know, areas there that normally you get a nice little run on big specks. But the report, Mike Gallo, and I talked to Deadly Dudley and some other fishermen, and they've kind of changed their tactics. If you're going to take trips out, it's going to be for redfish, sheephead, drum. Trout's almost non-existent in that area around the Twin Spans and I-10 bridge. And in fact, all the way down Robbie Campo at Shell Beach said, you know, the further east you go, you escape from that river water, you're going to find pockets of fish in them. But you're wasting your time looking for trout in some of that fresh water. He said he can't even keep bait live in the water down there. It's so fresh.
Well, I mean, you know, the Mississippi River went up again. And so, of course, you know, Keith mentioned opening the Bonacari again, but you know, typically we don't do that twice in a year, so this is like a second push of high water coming down the Mississippi and the Atchafalaya Rivers. That's not
never
common.
We've never done it twice.
Time of year. That's not common. So
well,
it makes
it's going to have an impact on the summer fishing for sure, you know, and depending on how much longer it stays open. And from what I'm told, they've had some torrential rains both here up the Mississippi River Basin. We still got a lot more to go.
Yeah, the wettest winter, I think, up north.
It's also impacting my work with the monitoring of the Prosonotary Warbler nest boxes, because over around Lake Pelord, those boat launches there are influenced by the water height of the Atchafalaya River, and so the launches are closed. We can't get out there to do our work. The water's just so unbelievably high. Actually, it's higher this week than it was in the first river peak, whenever that was in March. The water's higher now than it was 2 months ago.
Well, there's some people calling for opening up the Morganza, you know, and then once that's open and the Bonacari, we run out of spillways. There's nowhere else to put it after that. So, you know, hopefully we'll quit getting these rains and we'll get this water out of here and kind of get back to some type of normalcy. But, you know, right now it's good around the Grand Isle area, Fouchon area. They're doing very well on speckled trout there. I got a pretty good report from Calcasieu. So it's really down there, you know, on the east side of the Mississippi River for the most part that's really taking it on the chin as far as the speckled trout. But there's a larger issue with speckled trout in Louisiana, and that is that report, that preliminary report that came out earlier this year, that our speckled trout population has for years and currently is overfished. And if regulations are needed, there's going to have to be some steps. How stringent, we don't know yet, that'll be taken. We share kind of the same dilemma with Alabama, which is one state over from us, and they had some alarming news, too. And, you know, they have had a tremendous increase in the amount of pressure on their speckled trout and their flounder population. They went from 50,000 inshore fishing trips in the early 90s to 500,000 in 2011. That's 10 times the effort. They attribute that to the high fuel costs. They restricted the bag limits. They almost virtually killed the red snapper fishing industry until the La Creole and the accounting method came back, where there were more days and more of the quota was a bigger quota was allocated. But a lot of those offshore anglers, both recreational and charter captains, turned their sights on inshore, which means speckled trout and flounder. During that time, they said it increased the harvest 600%. But in 2014, it said that the landings dropped, and that is an indication that the fishery is unsustainable under the intense amount of fishing pressure. I think, personally, Alabama did the right thing. They came up with some remedy, some procedures, some new regulations that would change that, turn it around. They offered it to the public. They got input. And basically what the majority wanted is the way they've gone. And what the result has been is they've made these changes. They're going to go to a slot limit on speckled trout, similar to what we have on redfish. The low end's 15, the high end's 22. If you want to keep a trophy fish, one over 22 inches, one's allowed to be kept. It's only a 1-inch change from 14 inches what was previous. Now, the bag limit is where the reduction came in. They had a 10-fish speckled trout limit. It is now down to 6 fish. Flounder population, which we haven't even addressed that in Louisiana yet, although there's a lot of empirical evidence that shows that the flounders may be off, although they bounced back a little bit in recent weeks. But Alabama recognized there to be worse shape than the trout, and they're going from a 10-fish bag limit to 5. They're cutting it in half, and the minimum size is going up from 12 to 14 inches. They're also going to put in a spawning program for flounder to release juvenile flounder in hopes that they can restock the population. That's pretty much a tightening of the belt. Now, the question I would like us to discuss this morning is, if Louisiana needs to take some of these measures, will the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries handle it in the same manner? Will they put scenarios out for licensed speckled trout or licensed saltwater anglers to comment on, do some surveys, maybe have some meetings, take testimony at commission meetings, and get a consensus of what people would prefer to do as far as taking a hit and tightening the belt, but at the same time being able to get out and continue to fish? Now, I put a poll up last month and asking Louisiana's fishermen, if in fact, you know, we do need to make some changes, what would you prefer to see? And I'll run them down for the listeners who didn't get a chance to see it. Reduce 25 fish, which is our present limit, to between 10 and 15. 70%, that was the overwhelming majority, said they would take the hit on the total number that you can keep per day, drop it down as low as 10 or 15 from present 25. 70% would like to see the size increase from the minimum of 12-inch. Didn't say to what, whether it would go to 13 or 14, but every inch you go, you get a big return on the number of fish that stay in the water and get to spawn for the next year. Only 4%. There were three categories where just 4% would like to see that. Another was open and closed seasons, where you would actually close the season down for a specified period of time and you'd make it illegal to have speckled trout in your possession. That was only 4%. Another 4% said they don't want any change at all. They want to keep the 25 right where it is, 12-inch minimum. Nobody wanted to limit the number of saltwater anglers. In other words, put a moratorium on license sales. If you don't have a license and enough people don't get out of the fishery, there's going to be a total number sold, and that's going to be it. Nobody wants that. And to reduce from the 25 to less than 10 fish, as nobody in favor of that. And I'm not ruling that out of the possibility of what might be offered, because when you look at what the average catch of the average recreational angler is, if you go down to 15 fish and they're not catching even half of that, they're not catching 8 or 10, what good's it going to do to reduce it to 15? You've got to make a deeper cut than that. And I personally think that that is not going to really sit too well with Louisiana anglers. The other thing that's going to be interesting to see, will they follow in Alabama's footsteps and give the opportunity to the fishermen to make a choice, to maybe say, yes, we want to see it go from 25 to 10. We're all for that. Or do we want to increase the size limit? Or we do want to do some combination like Alabama did. They put in both a slot limit and they also went up on the minimum size. So it may be a combination. I'm hoping they will, unlike what the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries has done with turkey season. They give the users no voice at all in the matter. They come up with what they think is a workable program. They issue a decree, and you like it or you lump it. And I hope that's not what they're going to do with the speckled trout. And I've said a lot, and we come back from this break. Keith and Wendy, I want to get your take on it. What do you think Louisiana fishermen will buy if it becomes necessary to put these restrictions in? You listen to Hunt Fish Talk on the 105.3 FM WWL. And also, we live stream at DonTheOutdoorsGuy.com. We're back right after this timeout. And welcome back in. This morning, we're discussing a couple of issues that took place in Alabama and how they might relate to Louisiana. The first is their changes in their speckled trout and flounder regulations in order to remedy an overfished population of overfished. They catch you too many speckled trout, is what I'm trying to say. And on this show, we're old school. So we abide by the ladies first. Wendy, what do you think? What Alabama did fly here in Louisiana?
I think a combination of things would, but, you know, I get hung up on things like semantics, Don. You just used that word overfished, but that newsletter that Alabama put out with all this information about these changes, first off, what impressed me was that looking further into it, Alabama seems very confident that their stock assessments were done correctly and thoroughly, and I really don't have the confidence that we can say the same, because it was kind of a debacle we went through earlier in the year with a false start or a false report or whatever. And do we have any confidence in our stock assessment? Because something we've said on this radio program over the years is, show us the science, right? We've said that over and over. Mm-hmm. So nowhere in Alabama's information did they use the words overfished. And I think when we use that kind of language here in Louisiana, people go into overdrive. We get an emotional response. We get a knee-jerk reaction. And really, we talked about this last month. We didn't come to any definite conclusion of why the speckled trout and made the flounder populations down, but mainly speckled trout, because there was no mention in their report about BP, but, you know, Alabama mentions the BP money. They don't mention anything about the oil spill, but they just talk about facts of there is a decline, and it's not to an alarming degree yet, but we want to head this off. I just really, really appreciate their approach, and I think we lack that here in Louisiana. I think we have too many question marks about the information that we're getting and how it's being arrived at. Are you with me? Does this make sense?
Yeah, it does. It's a very keen observation that you made, and I completely agree with you. I mean, not only did they come up with hard numbers in assessing the problem, but they also gave some very hard numbers in what if this, then that. And I doubt, hoping that we will see that from Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries. I'm also hoping that we see they involve the users and they give you some options and let the population, you know, the fishermen decide what restrictions they would like to see before they go ahead and just decree these new laws that we're going to be faced with. But you're right, it's been pretty mysterious on
correct.
This study they did. It came out and they said it's been overfished. Well, wait, maybe it's not. We got to do some more studying. Why? By law, they have
real...
to do these stock assessments
right.
by law every so often, periodically. It wasn't like they were hit with this and all of a sudden we got to go get data and figure this out. They should have been accumulating and keeping this all along and keeping the tabs on it.
Well, and then they enlisted university in Alabama. I mean, are we working hand in hand with LSU? Are we using everything we have at our disposal? It just, you know, I just never would have thought this of Alabama. You know, we just think good old Alabama boys. But I'm impressed with what they're doing and they're attempting to do it. And maybe it's just all in the language. The person who wrote this release was just really concise. But you know what? In something as serious as making this decision about speckled trout when it is such a huge moneymaker in South Louisiana, we need to be clear and concise and specific and accurate. And we're not.
No.
We're not.
Keith?
Yeah, I mean, it's a catch-22 in Louisiana. I mean, I guess it's a good thing to see that it's not only us in Louisiana, you know, suffering with speckled trout and flounder. But on the other hand, it's kind of scary to see the same numbers that we're seeing here match those in Alabama as far as the decrease in total pounds caught and, you know, the breeding stock in decline for the past few years. Kind of makes you think that the problem is on a bigger scale and maybe something that's out of our hands. But look, it sounds like they've done their homework and they've involved the public, the actual people who fish for speckled trout. So it sounds like this is a move they have to make. I just hate to see the new reduced limit of any fish happen, because I know the odds of it going back to a 10 fish limit, you know, they went from 10 to 6. And I think going back up to 10 is a very small. So I hate to see, you know, any kind of government tighten any kind of noose, but the noose never gets loosened again. So I know that usually happens. So I guess it's a good thing to see them do this. As far as the how we handled it, the L.A. Creel, Wendy, you said that I think the L.A. Creel numbers are very dependable. I just think it's how Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries handled the release of it. They released it. They were just kind of timid. So I don't think that the way they handled it should you know, affect what your thoughts of L.A. Creel.
No, I'm not L.A. Creel. I didn't mention L.A. Creel. I'm referring more to our stock assessments and the way we do that spawning ratio. All of that was questionable.
Okay, but
yeah,
the actual numbers
pretty much applies to the offshore fishery, where the study, the stock assessment is done. Supposedly, it is done through a combination of data accumulation. One is they do fisherman surveys at the dock. When
mm-hmm.
you come in and you see the asking questions, they take that information. But they're also supposed to do some samplings, where they'll go out mm-hmm. with gill nets, and they'll go to certain areas, and they'll go to those same areas and put the nets down for the same amount of time, same time of year, basically the same conditions, and kind of get put them next to each other and see if what the measurements are. Will we get the same fish? Are they the same size? And those two things are the two major things that they come up with on assessing what the stock is. Now, to me, that should have been done and been kept up, because they knew this was coming. And then it's almost like it's a UFO situation where the government knows
don't
something,
tell the public.
But they don't,
yeah.
they're afraid to tell the public, like, we can't handle
mm-hmm.
it. We better not say
right.
this. So let's go back and to the drawing board and regroup and get our story straight before find out what we want to release. Whereas what you said, Alabama is A, B, C, D, here's F, G, H, and it's all
mm-hmm.
people, it's numbers and, you know, and what they did and what they got and what these changes will produce for them. Where we're just like, maybe there are aliens out there. I don't know.
See, therein lies the problem. Again, you know, they're not shooting straight with the fishermen and asking for input. They, you know, they held these meetings and they to enlist input, as they put it, to enlist input from the public, from the fishermen, to see what are you seeing. And of course, that's opinion. Of course, that's, you know, what do you want? What do you desire? But it's valuable because we are the end users. We pay for the licenses. We're the end users. We're the fishermen. We're the ones who are out there. So our information is valuable and our opinions are important. And I just haven't seen that done here. And it's the cart before the horse when some kind of report is released based on what?
And Don, your poll reflects that we are on board, you know, to reduce to 10 to 15 fish. 70% want to do that. That's a clear, you know, signal that we know there's a problem too. Let's just work together and try to correct it instead of being divided and you know, keeping secrets or UFO sightings, like you refer to it as.
Well, the question will be, will that get it? In other words, let's say they go to 15. Will that put back enough fish to keep the SPR at a safe level and keep fish stocks there? It may not be enough. You might have to either cut deeper into the daily bag limit, or you might have to increase the minimum size or put a slot or do a combination thereof. But that's what people need to see in front of them in order to make their own personal decision. The other consideration is, look, 25 fish, I see and hear a lot of advertisements going out to reach out to out-of-state fishermen. Come here to Louisiana. Catch 25 per person a day. You know, load up on the fish. How much will that hurt the economics if we go to where it's now a 10-fish limit, you know? Will the general public buy that, or is that only going to be a concern of the charter captains? Wendy, you were in the business. What do you think the feeling is among the charter boat industry?
You know, I really don't know. I really want to believe that we are all conservationists. Those of us who are out there and fish, and even not just, you know, charter guides, but recreational fishermen, we're conservationists. We respect the resource, and we really, by and large, want to do what's best for the future of the resource, and I do believe that.
Well, you know, one of the things I did not put on the poll, but I have heard from a lot of people sending me emails and just in casual conversation around the docks, is a lot of people say, we got to reduce that limit of those charter captains, keeping their own limit while they're fishing. And, you know, they're the ones that's catching all the fish. And when you look at the scheme of things, you know, that is really infinitesimal, the number of fish that those guys, they are, they're better every day. They're more experienced and they're more likely to catch fish than the average fisherman. But when you look at the total number of licensed fishermen that are out there putting baits in the water compared to those guys, they're just a drop in the bucket. And I don't, that's why I didn't put it on the poll. But I'll tell you what, everyone who is not a charter captain and some of the charter captains are in favor of not letting a guide keep their limit or actually reducing the limit, because then they can tell the client, you got your limit, day is done. It's a lot easier for them. It's not as lucrative a draw to pull people in from out of state, but it certainly makes their life easier as far as what they're doing day to day.
Well, Don, I want to speak to that when we come back from the break. I have something to say about that. Okay.
You always got something to say. We love to hear it.
I always do.
Right,
you know I do.
Wendy Billiott, Keith Lusher, I'm Don Dubuque. Thanks for tuning in to More Outdoors. It's Hunt Fish Talk time, and we're back to do more of it right after this. And we're talking the future of speckled trout fishing in the state of Louisiana. And Wendy, before we broke, you said you had a comment with regard to charter boat input and use of speckled trout as an economic engine for the state.
Okay, except that this isn't about our state. We skipped our neighbor, Mississippi. So we didn't, maybe you knew, maybe Keith knew, but I wasn't aware of this. In January of 2017, the Mississippi Commission on Marine Resources voted, well, they implemented it actually in January 2017. They increased the trout size limit to 15 inches. I don't know what it was before. for recreational fishermen, and they prohibit charter vessel captains and crew from keeping a daily bag limit. The daily limit for speckled trout remains at 15. So they can only keep 15. The captain and the crew may not keep a daily bag limit, and their minimum length is 15 inches. So looks like our stump jumping neighbors have the jump on us already on this. And something else that they said, I wanted to read this to you. I don't know who's saying this, but somebody in the Mississippi Commission, somebody named Jamie Miller, executive director. Here we go. Our scientists ran several different models to determine the best way to increase the spawning potential ratio, and they found that increasing the size limit from 13 inches to 15 inches would produce the best results. We believe that this will help us to get a sustainable stock of speckled trout in the next 3 to 5 years. So next year, 2020, will be 3 years, and I will be interested to see if this has, you know, increased the spawning potential ratio and how they're going to figure that out. So, you know, it's, you know, even Mississippi is ahead of us on this game. I mean, really?
Well, you don't want to insult Mississippi.
Even Mississippi.
Yeah. I'm sorry,
the
what?
Minimum's 15 in- the minimum is 15 inches in Mississippi?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Tough. That is tough there.
Yeah.
Do y'all think that the Louisianians, you know, how would they buy a raise in the minimum size? You know, I had 17% said they'd be in favor of going up from 12 inches, but how high up do you think they'd want to go?
Doesn't it have to do with the age and the spawning age and how many times they've spawned by the length of 14 inches?
Yeah, I think it's tricky biology there.
Yeah, well, the theory on the 12-inch is that by the time a speckled trout reaches 12 inches, it will have at least spawned one time. If you go up on a couple of inches, I don't know if that means it's going to get an extra spawn or whether it just keeps more spawners in the water because you got to release more fish. And then the factor of the mortality rate on speckled trout that the caught and release is pretty high, especially those small ones. You know, you get fishing with big kale hooks and live shrimp and 11, 12, 13-inch trout swallows that thing. You got to really be careful to save that fish. They are not as hardy nearly as a redfish or a bass as far as resuscitation.
But if we
when you adjust both, like Mississippi went to a 15, so a daily bag of 15, and then a 15-inch minimum size. That 15-inch minimum size.
That's making it tough to catch
the
limit.
That's 15. Yeah. I mean, that's like to say, okay, we're going to go out and catch our limit, 25 trout here in Louisiana, and it's 12 inches. Well, that's easy to do. Well, you raise it to 15, you know, that's tough. That's tough to get.
Well, that's why you don't have a whole lot of speckled trout charter guides in Mississippi, Keith.
A lot of them come to Louisiana waters. They fish Louisiana waters. They come
right
over to the Biloxi Marsh and some of those areas over there. But, you know, the thing about it is it seems as though if you go up on the minimum size, you don't have to cut as deep on the daily bag. I think the two things work together. You know, they might be able to go to 13 inches and keep 15 fish. But if they go to 14 inches, you might only be able to keep 10. Or vice versa. You know, the more fish, the lower the size, the more you can keep. If we're doing 25 and 12, then we might have to go to 15 and 13. Or we go to, you know, something, you know, in between that. I don't know. It gets tricky, but I think a combination might be better because then that satisfies, you know, not having to cut so deep on. If you keep it at 12 inches, they might say we got to go to 8 or 9 fish, less than 10.
Well, one thing that I noticed that Alabama said they're going to do is, as far as the flounder go, and they've already started collecting some flounder to spawn them. They're going to spawn them this winter. So maybe that's an option to help out. I don't know how you could do that with speckled trout, but, I mean, talking about flounder, I think that's a great idea. If you could spawn them in captivity, you can guarantee a survival rate of 80-90%, you know, until they're released. That could mean, you know, thousands of fingerling flounder being released. Now, I don't know how that translates into the wild, but it's worth a try. I mean, especially if you could do it with speckled trout. I don't, like I said, I don't know how tough they are to spawn like that, but I don't even know if there's any effort to do that. But that seems like an option as well. They say they can release 50,000 to 60,000 juvenile flounder annually if this works.
Texas does it.
Well, they've got a program in Texas. I don't know. I haven't seen the data on how successful it's been, but it's been going on longer. And, you know, Texas has got it going, and now Alabama's. You wonder how they fund these things. I mean, you know, we don't have any spawning for saltwater species.
One of them says,
They fund it with the hog baiting permit. That's how they fund it.
Oh, yeah. I think Alabama said it was...
The hog hunters wouldn't like that.
was federally funded. But on the Texas information, this they have a couple of different hatcheries over there. But the Sea Center, Texas, released 25,000 flounder fingerlings into area bays last year. But here's the information, Don. They provide, let's see, they're one of the most visible marine stock enhancement programs in the world. Annually, some 25 million juvenile marine finfish, which would be red drum, trout, and flounder, are produced and released in the wild. And it says, the Sea Center Texas is responsible for producing approximately a third of the red drum and one half of the spotted sea trout stocked in the Texas water.
Wow. That does cost money, though, like you said.
Well, and again, but, you know, we have this beautiful facility down at Grand Isle. What are we doing? We have several hatcheries in our state, and there was something planned for somewhere around outside Lafayette, another big, huge facility. I don't know whatever happened to that idea, but these are all things that we were supposed to be getting into. But, yeah, restocking, wouldn't that be part of the program for at least for flounder, because other states are doing it, and they're doing it successfully, and we're not.
Well, that's an excellent point. You know, if you're spawning and releasing fish, then that might make you not to have to go so deep on the cuts of daily bag and the increase in size limit, because you're compensating for, you know, you're taking more fish out, but you're also putting some back in. And they may be considering that. But, you know, we just don't get any information. They're not very media or user group friendly at Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries. You know, everything should be out in the open and keeping you up to date and sending out weekly newsletters on what's happening in your state, what they're doing. You know, they just kind of get behind the lab, and, you know, we wonder what goes on back there. We don't know.
Before we leave this topic, I want to agree with you, Don, and say that it really is such an easy tool in the hands of wildlife and fisheries to hold these public meetings and take good records, statements, surveys, whatever it is we need to do. We can fill them out in person. We can put our names on them. But if you go to the public, fishermen, licensed fishermen, and you gather this information and you give the people what they want, then they can always turn back around and say, this is what you wanted. This is what you asked for. You see, and then it makes us responsible for the resource.
And one more thing on the overfishing. It seems like the flounder numbers are reflecting, you know, the same as the speckled trout. And if they say speckled trout's being overfished, then what's to blame for flounder? Because flounder, I mean, you can't say they're overfishing flounder. I mean, nobody specifically targets flounder. I mean, a few people do, but flounder, for the most part, is a byproduct. We just catch them as they come. So I just think there's something bigger than overfishing, and that could be a part of the equation, but I don't know if it's BP or something. Now we're starting to see the flounder come back. That would explain if it was in direct relationship to the BP oil spill. If they're coming back now, maybe they're finally recovering. But as far as overfishing goes, how do you blame overfishing on flounder?
I don't.
Well, it could be. Flounder is considered a commercial fish. So it could be that commercial fish, the trawlers, and that's how they catch them, is in the trawls along with the shrimp. They may be targeting flounder more.
And if they have the license, they're allowed to sell them.
Sure.
Correct?
Right. Yeah.
And
Alabama reduced the commercial. They reduced the commercial limit also.
Correct.
Couldn't they just check the commercial flounder numbers though and see an increase, and that would tell you that there would be an overfish on the commercial side?
Don't know.
It depends on if they have to do trip tickets on the flounder, right? They have to report what they catch.
Right. I think that could be easy to figure out how much is being, you know, caught, unless it was a big spike in commercial flounder catch, you know.
They didn't mention that in their release, whether, you know, they just said that they approved it. They're going to put a daily trip limit of 30 fish per boat, you know, on the commercial harvest.
I think it's bigger
now,
than
whether that was
than.
In response to data that they had on, you know, flounder landings, and because that's supposedly, I mean, there's always going to be fudge room, but, you know, it's pretty well regulated, because whenever you sell them to seafood, there's paperwork got to go along with it, and they keep pretty tight reins on it. So
right.
I don't know where they were. Maybe they noticed that there was actually a lower landings on the commercial harvest end of it too, which is more evidence of overfishing, more pressure than necessary, so they put this limit on them. But be interesting to see. All right, look, we got to take a break, and I didn't want to spend a lot of time on it, but it's pretty interesting. They have a bait permit for hunting white-tailed deer and wild hogs in the state of Alabama, which has for years and years prohibited baiting for deer. Then they went to, and so did Mississippi, kind of this, well, I'm baiting, but I'm really not baiting because I can't see it, where you could put it so many distance, you could be so far away from it, and it had to be obstructed by natural vegetation and a certain distance away. Well, now it's full-blown baiting like we've been doing here in Louisiana since time immemorial, and you just got to pay for a permit. We'll see what your thoughts are on that. We'll be right back to talk about Alabama's new deer baiting license, and they're on sale right now at a place near you. We'll be back after this.
Blue lights.
Well, this topic deals with deer hunting in Alabama, although it kind of relates a little bit to Louisiana. I'm going to ask the question, should Louisiana have a permit to put bait out white-tailed deer for hogs? Alabama, in this last legislative session, voted in favor of creating a deer and feral hogs bait permit. It will cost residents of Alabama $15. For us Louisianians out over there, we got to pay $51. And that is per person. That is not per bait feeder. This is going to put an awful lot of money into the coffers of Department of Wildlife and Fisheries in Alabama. I do not know their total number of licensed deer hunters, but I'm thinking it's probably somewhere around 300,000. I don't know how many of them are going to pay this $15 fee, but it's going to generate a lot of funds. $15 in the scheme of deer hunting is nothing. By the time you pay for leases and equipment and four-wheelers and rifles and ammunition and the feeders themselves and then tractors and seed and everything that goes into operating a deer lease, $15 is not going to break anybody. They also leave the provision in, and this is one trend I think really needs to be observed more in managing wildlife. So much hunting takes place now on private land. Of course, the management areas, the public lands, they stay pristine as far as regulations. They don't allow any baiting. They don't allow four-wheelers to go in there. You've got to pretty much be a old-school hunter if you're going to hunt those areas. But on private lands, it's kind of up to the club members or the leaseholders. If they want to put corn out and that's the way they want to hunt, they can do it. If you've got a lease and you don't believe in that and you think it's baiting and it's unethical to do that, to sit on a stand and draw deer in to eat and kill them while they come in there, you don't have to do that. Your club can vote to opt out of that. And then there's the middle of the road approach that they've had for all this time, where if you're 100 yards away from the bait and you can't see it, if it's out of your line of sight, you don't need the permit. It's legal to do it. Mississippi has the same regulation. So I'm hearing from a lot of people in Alabama say, oh, it's just a money grab. But I think there should be a fee along with this permit, because I think what it will do is not just generate more funds to better manage the deer. It's also going to give them contact information with the people who are doing that. And they can contact them from time to time, do hunter survey results. What are you doing now? What were you doing before? Is this workable? Do you like it? Are you seeing it? All I can tell you about hunting with corn, and I've been doing it for a long time, a lot of it depends on the type of habitat you're hunting. if some of these people who say that's not hunting, it's unethical, you know, you can track their trails and follow the rubs and scrapes and hunt deer in traditional way. Let me tell you, on my lease, you don't hunt like that. We're hunting pine cutovers. They're so thick you can't even see through them, much less walk through them. You basically got to cut you a hole out of clearing, and it's a small little area because of the paper companies won't let you destroy the trees. And if you put bait in there, you got a shot at killing a deer. And I will tell you something else. If the club next to you has corn and you don't, your deer herd is going to suffer because they're going to get drawn into those other areas. And I think I like it because I think it leaves it up to the discretion of the club members and the hunters. If you don't like it, don't have it. If you do like it, you can do it. And for $15, that's not going to break hunters. What are you thinking, Wendy?
So in Louisiana, that brings it up. If you're going to bait, that brings it up to $44, your license. $29
well,
is the other two plus another $15.
Yeah, well, if we have it.
Okay, so what would the $15, how can we guarantee, would that go toward deer management? I mean, how can we guarantee that? Right now there's not a whole lot of trust.
Well, they could dedicate it, but we all know that their funds have a way of ending up in other places. So,
well, deer hunting's not high on my list. However, I do have some family and friends who are avid deer hunters, and I didn't talk to them about this, but I imagine if they're baiting deer and or hogs, they would pay the $15 to continue to do so.
Mm-hmm.
That's
Keith, opinion. You know any deer baiters?
Let me just clarify something. It's free here in Louisiana to bait deer, correct?
Right.
On private land or a lease.
Right. Yeah, you can't do it on a wildlife house.
So Alabama is doing the exact same thing but charging $15 to do it, right?
Right, exactly.
See, I think that's a dangerous slope. I mean, when did the government turned into a business to where they're just constantly trying to get money from us? I mean, what we just talked about was the speckled trout limit being reduced. I mean, what's the difference in bringing the speckled trout limit down and then charging a permit to catch 20 back to 25? See what I'm saying? How money infiltrates everything. It's just, I don't know. It just seems like they're throwing hog into this. I mean, I'm all for that. I mean, I'm for dynamite and hogs, you know, if you want to. But, I mean, I think – I just don't know where they're going with this as far as the hog is concerned. I mean, they should be doing more. They should be paying hunters $15 to kill more hogs. So I just don't know why the hogs is tied in with the deer baiting. I think that should be separate. But you know, we're just being nickel and dimed, and I think it's an obvious money grab to me.
Well, as long as it stays within the biological program and it doesn't take away from the population. See, if with the speckled trout thing, if you could buy a permit to catch more speckled trout, that would fly in the face of proper management because they need to reduce it. White-tailed deer in Alabama, there's no shortage of them. There's plenty of them. I think this is just an argument over how we take them, what method we use. And
yeah.
Again,
yeah, maybe
like
you're right, but Alabama, I mean, leave well enough alone. That's got the highest population of deer in the country. I mean, it's a popular destination for hunters, you know, across the nation. I don't know. I think that's gonna affect some things as far. That's a big deal, baiting. I mean, like you said, if the club next to you is baiting, it forces you to bait. Basically, everybody's gonna be baiting, you know. But that's just my opinion.
Is it possible that they've just instituted this or are allowing it now? Is it possible that attaching a $15 fee to it will keep some people from doing it?
Not if it affects if the club next to you is paying $15 for baiting and you see your deer population go down, you're paying that $15. It's almost a guarantee.
And Don, you said it's for hunter.
Yeah, it's
hunter.
For hunter.
If you hunt in a club that baits, whether you bait or not by your stand, you have to pay the $15?
Well, if it's designated where everybody's got their own stand and you don't have any bait around you, no, you wouldn't have to pay for it.
Okay. That's up to the very individual then. Okay.
Yeah, let's clarify. Yeah. Baiting is different from a food plot, too.
Right, right.
I don't think it's going to stop Indiana hunters from paying it. I don't think it's going
to
stop.
Well, and I don't see that they're going to try to implement it now. You know, if they would have done it when they first legalized it, which I don't know if it was one of those things that had to be legalized or it was just done and there was nothing to stop it or nothing against it. I think it was more of that situation. And now to try to tack on the fee to do something you've already been doing for a long time for free, they'd have to come up with a strong argument to justify a cost to it.
And let's clarify that we are talking about Alabama is doing this. We're just speculating about how Louisiana hunters would react.
Right.
This is
right.
not.
Yep.
Let's just be clear about that. We don't want to open a whole new can of worms.
Yeah, there'll be rumors started that Louisiana is going to start charging $50 to put corn out for deer and hogs. You know.
So let's be clear.
Yeah. And I don't know if y'all saw the refish thing that they put a charge on the endorsement to designate you as going fishing for reef fish or regular fish. But that's another money grab to me. I know it's bringing that in late, but we can talk about that later.
Alabama.
Well, you know, hunters and fishermen, we've always been the ones that kind of pay our own way. You know, everybody else relies on general fund tax money. But with hunting and fishing, it's different. And people usually are glad to pay it in order to have it and enjoy
that's
it.
That's right.
All right, guys.
Hey,
time's
one more
up.
Thing. Don, I started off the show saying what a great weather week. Well, it started with a little tornado Sunday morning, and I got some damage at Camp Dularge. So,
oh, no.
Oof. The week could only get better from there.
There you go. All right, guys, enjoyed it. We'll see you all again next month with another edition of Hunt Fish Talk.
Have a great week.
Bye.
All righty. All right, we'll be back again next week starting at 5 a.m. with the Outdoor Show and wrap it up here with more outdoors. See you then.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.